Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and what's next. It's a show that asks questions and peels back the layers of our average everyday experience and goes beyond scratching the surface. We interview people doing incredible things who are making a difference around the globe. Join me as we listen in and get one step closer to understanding that big ideas shared create collaboration. Collaboration can inspire community, and communities create social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is with director, actor, writer, producer Paul Leyden, and we talk about his new film, Chick Fight. It's available online. Not exactly sure where you can get it, but check out the website. You'll find access there. But search Chick Fight on all the usual suspects, and it's going to come up. It's Malin Ackerman, who's brilliant in this, by the way. I mean, this is a comedy. It's probably not a film that I would normally go after to interview, you know, a director or cast or the producers for, but when I saw, the trailer, you know, arrived in my inbox from a publicist, watched the trailer immediately and just had several laugh out loud moments. I mean, there's a performance by Alec Baldwin in this that's just, it's just absolutely hysterical. And like I said, Malin, who really does carry this film in so many ways, she's funny, she's thoughtful, and just marvelous to watch as this film sort of, you know, unfolds in front of you. And as Paul says, he's got some tons of great advice in this interview, by the way, for artists, for budding actors, for people who are writing. He talks about not being afraid of the blank page, and I think that's just worth the price of admission. But you know, he refers to Chick Fight as being a film about empowerment, female empowerment in particular, but not heavy-handed. I mean, it seems to me that the, you know, this is one of those films that one day somebody, you know, Paul's going to be somewhere and somebody's going to say, you know what, I saw Chick Fight and I know you didn't want to be heavy-handed and you weren't. But you know what? There was a couple moments that were just game changers for me. And isn't it interesting? It's an interesting comment on film, and it can be light and still have an impact. And that splash and ripple, you know, the seeds are planted. And I think sometimes in a comedy, more seeds are planted than we can actually imagine. He talks about, you know, not losing his soul to the job that he had sort of committed to. And I don't know exactly how he got from being an economist to being an actor, but we'll economics and law, by the way, but we'll let him tell you that. But we talk about tuna toast and baked beans, and you're going to find out why Joel Silver, one of the, you know, the most significant producers in Hollywood in the last 30, 40 years. Paul talks about that. And again, you know, this idea that the blank page not scaring him. Yeah, Paul says this is Bridesmaids meets Fight Club. So if either of those films appeal to you, then you might want to check this out. But it's a lot of fun, and there's a lot more going on here than meets the eye. So stay tuned. Coming right up, interview with Paul Leyden about his fun new film, Chick Fight. And also, don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my writing and speaking, and you can purchase a copy of Real Change is Incremental there. And then if you've arrived at this interview in a variety of different digital ways through iTunes, Spotify, one of the usual suspects, and you haven't heard of me or the interviews or face-to-face, check us out online, facetofacelive.ca, over 540 published interviews. We're going to continue this thing for a long time. It's about conversation, it's about inspiration, and it's about planting seeds. And I'm loving every minute of it. Can you tell? So check us out there. Sign up for the newsletter. Please share this with family and friends. And we'd really appreciate it if you if you'd take a couple of minutes or less, it really is less, folks, and leave us a review. We need the reviews. It just helps in a big way. We're coming up with a contest. It's happening. I'm relaunching the site in the very near future. But thumbs up on YouTube, a little quick review on iTunes can make all the difference. So please do that if you're enjoying what we're up to here. But don't touch the dial. I don't even know what that means anymore in this. Don't touch the screen. Would that be a better way to say that? But coming right up, a fun, thoughtful, interesting interview with Paul Layden, a real generous guy, in his new film, Chick Fight.
Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest here with us today, calling from another part in the world somewhere. And believe it or not, we actually are face to face on Zoom. We've got Paul Layden here to talk about his new film, Chick Fight. Paul, thanks for taking the time to hang out with me today on Face to Face.
Pleasure, David. Nice to be here.
So maybe the first question is, how do you go from acting into writing, producing, directing? Maybe that's the first question.
I mean, look, at least they all live in the same universe.
Right, that. Yeah, that's good.
Well, you can't do one without the other. None of them exist individually. I was an actor for a long time. I went through, I was always a writer from a young age. I always loved writing and wrote lots of, short stories that got published in newspapers in Australia and this and that. And then, you know, I fell into a different occupation, you know, coming out of school, you don't know really what you want to do. And I got enough grades to get into economics law and Monash University in Melbourne. And I dropped out of the law part and, you know, much to my dad's happiness, I stuck out the economics part, you know, and got through and did well and ended up at a firm called Pricewaterhouse at the time. And then I realized, what am I doing? I'm basically losing my soul.
Right.
And I would just spend my whole time there. Like, you know, back in those days, it was the 90s, and, you know, I'd be in my cubicle and the partner would walk past and I'd have my cash flow on the screen. As soon as he crossed, up would come a very primitive screenwriting program. So, you know, I was the worst employee ever. So I got to the point where I was like, I've got to get out of here. This is not for me. And I acted in a fringe play that
like
did very
a, like
well.
A, and then, like, a fe- you know, like a festival?
Like a festival thing. Yeah. And then I was like, wait a second, this is good. Okay. So I tried out for the biggest drama school in Australia, which is the National Institute of Dramatic Arts, which is on NIDA. So, you know, a few people, recognizable names, came out of there, like, you know, Judy Davis, Jeffrey Rush, Hugo Weaving, Mel Gibson. The list goes on. I mean, look at the graduates from there. It's a very, very Cate Blanchett. It's an incredible school, and, you know.
So you were in the right place.
Yeah, I mean, look, it definitely is. If in a small industry like Australia, if you're a NIDA graduate, you've got 2 feet in the door pretty much straight away. So, you know, I worked quite, you know, well as an actor coming out of there. And then I got a job in New York on a soap, which was, all of a sudden, I'm living off tuna, toast and baked beans. And now I'm living the life of in the early 2000s in New York. And, you know, that was like school for me, being on that show. It was, you know, every day you get to try something new and different. And the next day it's forgotten. And then, you know, the acting kept going from there. But I was always writing. And then, you know, I did a TV show that got cancelled after 13 episodes when I moved to LA. And then I was like, look, I just need a little break from there. A buddy of mine had just won Project Greenlight Australia. He was living with me because he was in Australia, in LA getting agents. And so we just sat together and I pitched him this movie idea and he responded. It seemed like the right type of movie in the zeitgeist at the time. And we wrote it together and we sold it. It sold to Joel Silver and Warner Brothers and had John Cusack in it, a movie called The Factory. which is sort of a dark psychological thriller, came out around 2008. And then from there, that was it. That was the transition. That was the point where I was like, oh, I can make a living out of this too. That's cool. I was always a bit of a control freak. So.
No, it's fantastic. So much here we could go on. So much to talk about.
As an actor, you say a lot of other people's lines, obviously.
And right.
I was sometimes luxurious enough to be able to pitch my rewrites and get away with them. But you have no control over the character journey or this or that. And so I love the control as a writer. I love that sort of that creativity of reading books and discovering worlds, making stuff up, really delving into your imagination. And the blank page doesn't scare me. I love that blank canvas.
Great.
It's like a painter before they do their first brush stroke. It's the sky's the limit. So anyway, great. Of course, selling that movie very easily would never happened again. That was like lightning in a bottle.
Well, Joel Silver, could you have started maybe just a little lower on the ladder, perhaps?
It was pretty phenomenal. He's obviously, it was with Silver Entertainment. It was Dark Castle Pictures who had, made some phenomenal movies in that genre. And to get someone like John Cusack and Jennifer Carpenter in their leads, it was a dream. The movie did okay. It wasn't, I don't think it got the release it was a writer's strike hit and all that. Anyway, but yeah, mate, from there, just the writing continued and I kept doing, getting paid rewrites and setting stuff up and, to the point where, it's been a really wonderful journey.
Yeah. It sounds like
and now I've got stuff that's being set up in Asia and now in France as well. And so it's the great thing about writing is it the good ideas and the good stories hopefully can sort of break through borders
it's so great. I love everything you said. The blank page doesn't scare you. Holy cow. There's a title for a book, by the way. I think the title of your autobiography should be Tuna Toast and Baked Beans. I think that could be, exactly. My road to Hollywood.
That's the name of my cookbook. That's for sure.
That's right. But it's so great because, how the heck did you leave, how did you start in economics and law and end up here? And isn't it wonderful to sort of look back and connect some of those dots,
I'll tell you one reason how I did. I am shit with, excuse my language. I'm terrible with numbers.
Right. That's so funny.
For a guy, and look, I did very well. I've got a good short-term memory. Not as much now. I'm a bit longer in the tooth now. But back in those days, in my 20s, early 20s, I had a really good short-term memory. So I could go into an exam after reading the massive, thick, 2,000-page book of boring numbers and economics, surplus and demand stuff that you needed to know. And I could memorize it. I could know what, and then I could regurgitate it for the exam. I would step out, go to the local pub, have a beer. And if someone asked me what the exam was about, I couldn't remember. Which is why
it's a gift.
Was so terrible.
It's a gift.
It's a gift. It was like, I was like a goldfish. I'd get the information and I'd just flush it out. So I think that helped the transition was like, oh, that's good. When it comes to acting, I can remember lines very easily. And then I can just get rid of it. I think one of the transitions to the arts was the fact that I was such a terrible accountant. Even to this day, my wife is like, when we're looking at buying houses or doing this or whatever, she's like, how did you even control other people's money? That's
dangerous.
You're horrible.
So funny. Yeah. I see your website, economist at the top. And then the tagline is I'm terrible with numbers. Yeah. It's fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. Let's hire that guy. Yeah. Let's bring him on board. So tell me about Malin Ackerman and this film Chick Fight. Had so much fun watching it. A lot of laugh out loud moments. And it's sort of a classic. I was going to say coming of age. It's not coming of age, but it's somebody who's down and out, kind of rebuilding, right? Tell us a little bit about the film.
The film, again, with films like this, I think they live in a space and they work well when you're doing something familiar, but you're not completely reinventing the wheel. You're just giving a unique spin on it. And so when the script came to me, and I read it and I just immediately saw, you know, that thing that you do in Hollywood, which is pitch. Oh, it's this movie meets that movie. And for me, when I read it, I got to the end. I was like, wow, that's Bridesmaids meets Fight Club.
Right.
I'm like, I love those two films. And I'm like, how do those two films actually even live in the same space? How can we make that work? So I think for me, I love the fact that there was a familiarity. There was, it's a script and something that we're doing, and this is not, we're not shy of wearing our homages on our sleeves. We're not being really subversive. We're just going, do you know what? We know you know these types of movies. We know that you're, you know, there's a woman who's a bit down and out. She needs some inspiration. Where's she going to find it? And as the message comes in the movie, if you learn to fight in the ring, you know, if you learn to take that kind of pain, then you can beat the shit out of life. And nothing in the real world comes close to being a problem if you've stepped into a ring and faced down real hurt and pain. You know, if you're in a ring, it's like the boxer's mentality. That mentality is you're stepping inside a ring, but that other person is not going to stop until you're knocked out, until you're literally have lost consciousness. That's their goal. That's a lot of psychological stuff to face to want to get in there and do that sport, and I think that's what this, you know, what we wanted to get across in this was these are women that are facing, you know, real life issues, and they don't have an outlet to get that rage out, to get those frustrations out, and this Fight Club. You know, it's in the movie, it's started by a woman who is a therapist, and this is sort of a way for her patients to, yeah, you know, it's a bit backward thinking potentially, but maybe even progressive thinking at the same time. But these women are able to get in the ring and face something really challenging, and that's physical pain and competition, and yet it builds community and it built a safe space for these women.
I love how Charlene says, you know, it's not a fight club, it's a shelter.
It's a shelter. It is a shelter, and it is, and then look, of course there's not going to be that competition, and there's, because you need that in a fight club, in a fight movie, you need the rivalry, you need the woman to, the underdog to train, and you need her to fight the best one. That's what you want to see. But, you know, it's the way it's told and the journey and the experience doing it that I think is rewarding. And I think in this, bringing that comedy with the sort of the brutalness, not the brutalness, but I didn't want to do, with the fights, I didn't want to do something where, oh, it's just going to be girls getting in a ring and slapping and doing hair pulling. And it's like, nah, there's none of that. We're doing something really special with this. We want it to look like any male fight movie. It's what these women are doing, and that's what the actresses did, and that's what our stunt women did. They put themselves on the line in that ring to create fights that are going to be entertaining, not to just the, you know, to all sexes, you know, to both sexes watching it. I think you know, again, going, I don't know what the question was, I tend to ramble, but
it's all good. It's great.
This movie wearing its homages on its sleeve and being, again, I just wanted this movie to be tonally consistent, to be funny, for the fights to be cool and gripping. So by the end of the film, the audience is sitting there going, that was a good time. I'm just with a smile on their face and going, wow, I needed that diversion, especially here in 2020 where we're at. I think we all need that, just that diversion, that lightness, that likability. And I think everyone in this movie is, there's just a likability factor that
there's no one
mean. Even the you know, Bella, I think, you know, it shows in the trailer that she's a bit of the, meant to be the villain. Everyone's even likable. And I think that's what I wanted. I wanted something where there wasn't a mean bone in this film's body. And I think right now, I think we all need that a bit.
No, it's great. Did you, Paul, ever get the sense reading the script that, you know, someday you're going to hear a story about some young woman who watched this film and went, you know what, that actually, you know, I had a great time watching that film, but I remember that it was at a certain time in my life, love that film, and it actually changed the course for me. Like, did you ever, I mean, as a director, as a writer, as an actor, do you ever think of that sort of bigger picture? Because, I mean, you mentioned earlier about storytelling and how important it is. I mean, it can change, you know, even a comedic film like this, right? It can be
a
moment.
I think if that happens, holy, that's incredible. That's amazing. I don't think I would set out as that being my goal.
Right,
I feel
right.
that would be an arrogant way for me to start right. out going, I'm making this to... So down the line, I'm going to walk down the street and someone's going to say that movie. That's not the place I would start from. But I definitely, when in making this movie, I knew that we could do something a little, again, it's funny, it's light, it's meant to be entertaining. But there is a message. There is something empowering about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think we're not heavy-handed. I always said when I was rewriting and trying to get that message across, I wanted to be concise about it and have the heart of it, but not hit it over the head, because again, these types of movie can't sustain you hammering home a message
right.
or a point. I think if you address it, you see it, and you live up to it throughout the film, the message is there. So look, again, if that happens, if someone sees this movie and it makes them laugh and it inspires them, and then that's a massive bonus. You know, we set out to entertain. If it influences someone's life, that's, you know, other level.
Hey, speaking of influencing lives, seeing Alec Baldwin doing a push-up with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth was worth the price of admission. That was
that's
fantastic.
Obviously, yep. That's, you know, and Alec's not a smoker. I mean, that's something that he did for the character, and he was, you know, that was obviously, you know, as all good fight movies need, they need montages.
That's right.
As they say in a team. What is it? Team America. That, you know, the puppet movie.
I know the movie. I don't...
Yeah, there's a song. Every fight movie needs a montage. We've got your montages covered in Chick Fight. And, you know, that was one of those ones where Alec's there and we're doing all these different things. And, you know, we had a very, 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 very tight schedule.
Yeah, I read that. Yeah. In Puerto Rico, right?
Yeah. And it was cool, you know, and Puerto Rico is a beautiful backdrop, but it's not without its challenges.
Right.
Being especially, you know, the natural environment. We were facing hurricanes. So not hurricanes. We were facing, it's normally hurricanes there. We were facing the worst earthquakes in 100 years. So we were losing power left, right, and center. It was really rough. And then, you know, when it rains, it there's a couple of drops, and then it's a deluge within seconds. And, you know, God love Alec. He's just the most professional human being. I'm so incredibly humbled and blessed to work with that man. He would sit on, you know, even the Puerto Ricans would scatter. You know, the rain would come and they'd scatter. You know, the umbrellas would come up. They would seek shelter wherever it is, palm trees, whatever. There's Alec, sits on his little crate. Umbrella comes up. if in the scene, it was a scene where he had the cigar as a character, it just continued to puff away at that thing. Just looking out at the ocean or wherever. We shot all his stuff in the one location. So it was, you know, right by the ocean. And so he'd just look there and reflect and call his wife, and it was just really amazing to see that once he came onto set, he did not leave. He was there. He was available. And this is a man that's worked with Scorsese and
it's crazy talk, right?
And you know, the stories, you know, we would have dinner with Alec, and you know, he's a master storyteller. And not because he's just like, oh, here's a story about it. It's just they come out so effortlessly and you're just hanging on every word, and you're able to ask questions, and the time that he was on set was just completely joyous.
I mean,
there's nothing about that guy that you can't that hasn't been said. He's
right.
He's a pro, and he's a beautiful human being.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. So many great performances for sure. But yeah. Everyone's sense of comedic timing in this film, and I'd love to hear about that. Is brilliant. I mean, it's just it's on, and I don't even know what you call that bounce bag, bounce back boxing bag. That scene where Alex says, "Oh yeah, she's got her," Chloe and Alex say, "Oh, she's got a really hard head." that is a hilarious scene. That whole training sequence is hysterical.
Well, that was one of the things that I was keen to do when we decided to shoot in Puerto Rico. It's not set in Puerto Rico. We never say where this movie's set. For me, when I was chatting with my DP Steve, who did a wonderful job, like bringing the right look to this, which I wanted to be colorful and very neon and. We kind of wanted to embrace that real Southern Florida vibe, like that those neons and the pinks and the greens and the bit of the heightened
very colors. Rich, yep.
Yeah, and I think Puerto Rico really leans into that. But when I, the production designer, Mylara, she just got on the same page with me from the beginning because I was like, let's do something unique. Here is a character. Alex's character is the trainer. He basically lives in a beachside bar, Jimmy Buffett style. That's where he trains people from. I'm like, he doesn't want to step too far from the bar. So what's he going to do? He's going to have his training facility right outside the bar. We're in a tropical environment. What does that gym look like? I don't want barbells. I don't want, this. I said, what if we used, because where we were, there's those really hard green coconuts. I'm like, what if that's the speedball? What if the boxing bag is made of, like a Hessian banana bag that he fills with sand? Really rustic, really gritty, really just different. And so Mylara and her team really embraced that. They loved that. So they were able to build that kind of that unique gym. So which again leads to comedy. Because, when you're punching a coconut, they're really, obviously it wasn't a real coconut we had it built.
But sure, sure.
It's they're really hard. So when it bounces back and hits you in the head numerous times, Marlon's a drop dead genius comedic performer. So she's able to bring the funny to those
she really is
situations.
And yeah, I mean, I want to just give you a shout out on being able to capture that sense of community and rapport. It makes me wonder what was going on under the umbrellas when it was raining.
Well, I think with Marlon, Marlon is obviously an incredibly talented comedic and dramatic performer. She is, it also helps that she's one of my best friends in real life. So when I got the script in the place, I was happy with it. Even if they're your best friends and they're very close to you, you only have one shot. These are in demand people. So when I was happy with where the script was at, I went to her with it and she really responded. She's like, okay, I think this is it. I think there's something here. And then, obviously when you've got casting, when you're casting around someone like Marlon, she becomes your son. Now you can set some planets around her. And then our planets aligned. Bella, Bella came on and Bella's a really interesting actress and has a different kind of following as well, and she really threw herself into the part. Then you Alec came on once I sort of rewrote the role for him, and to get his, which is great. He was very, very hands-on in sort of molding. Again, when we got Alec, we weren't going to have him for the run of shoot. We had to shoot him out. So you know you have to be hit the marks you need to hit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to utilize that, to utilize him in the best way in a short amount of time. And then around from there, we get someone like a Fortune Feimster who is just hysterical, an amazing stand-up performer and a fantastic actress. She plays Bear. Then, once we started to get these more recognizable names, I kept saying, I really want to discover someone for Charlene, who is Marlon's best friend in the movie. I was like, I want a comedian. I want someone who obviously is funny, but I don't want to recognize someone who's too recognizable.
Right. Right.
I want this to be that role where someone says, like Melissa McCarthy in Bridesmaids, you know, she came out of that having sort of stolen that movie and became, you know, the star that she is. So when one of the producers kept sort of every morning and night was getting on looking at stand-up comedians and this and that, and he showed me Dulce, who is quite, you know, famous as being a correspondent on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah.
Mm-hmm.
But not having watched her that much on that, he showed me some stand-up on YouTube. Especially, she was very successful in Australia, and she did the Melbourne Comedy Festival there a couple of times. And I watched the stand-up. I'm like, she's it.
Right, she's that's it. So great.
How do we get her? I'm like, get her. I just, Ash, whatever you do, get me on a phone call with Dulce. Eventually, she read the script. She really responded. We had a phone call, and we were off to the races. And, you know, everyone was in the same film. You know, that was a nice thing, mate. Like, everyone, these talented performers all came together, and they all were in the same movie. They all saw the same movie. No one saw it as more slapsticky than what it was. It was tonally, everyone lived in the same space, which is why I think it really, it sort of, the comedy even plays better, because no one's hitting a joke too hard or too
right.
soft, or everyone sort of playing it for real. You know, we're playing this for, you know, a grounded sort of comedy. And the chemistry between everyone was just terrific.
Chemistry's terrific. You really do get a sense that these women are friends, and that they truly do care about each other, which I think is a wonderful thing to come through in such a, you know, I hope you don't mind me saying, kind of a lighter film in a sense. But,
for sure.
But still, I 100%. Think what I love about films like this, Paul, is I think that the message of the film, whatever that is, whatever your intention was, I actually think gets through in a better way because you relax. Right? You're just enjoying yourself. You're watching the film, you're laughing out loud, and the message is, you know, that fight it out, hug it out kind of a thing, you know?
Exactly.
It gets hit home, I think. That's yeah. my sense anyway.
And look, again, you know, no one built a pool out of this movie. No one was adding an extension to their house. Everyone did this
right.
for the smell of an oily rag, because
right.
we had to shoot it on. And so I think that sort of, sometimes that really comes across in performance, because you're not going in it apart from with your heart.
Right.
And I think everyone who came to play on this movie responded to the material, responded to the way I pitched them, how we were going to, you know, tell this story. And we all lived in the same space. You know, we all were in the same movie. We all came to set with a smile on our face. It was tough. We didn't have barely enough days, but we were all in it together, you know. And I think that shows, hopefully, on screen. There was no one who kicked up a stink about the fact that they weren't getting what they normally get. It was just, everyone's like, we're just having a good time. And you know, these are roles that people aren't often offering.
Sure.
Women,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
They get to when, you know, the first time I loved it, once again with my production designer, my Lara and Steve, the DP, and we designed, I wanted this Fight Club space not to be, you know, you see Fight Club, the Fincher movie, which is obviously a genius film. These guys fought in a concrete basement at the bottom of some stairs. There was nothing. That was the grit of it.
Yeah,
and I was
sure.
like, well, I don't want that. I want something, again, a community. I want this area of this place. I want to have couches and, you know, different types of furniture. And one thing I really wanted was, firstly, the cage. I wanted to be unique. I wanted it to be a cross between, I always said, if an MMA cage had sex with a boxing ring, this would be the result. This would be the baby. And so
right,
it became
right.
known as the baby cage. So we kept, you know, so my Lara did an amazing job designing the baby cage. And then I was like, this community, if these women are out in real, you know, in real life, and they're at a flea market and they see a lamp, that becomes something they go, oh, I'll buy that for a few dollars. And I'll donate it to the Fight Club, you know, when I turn up on Saturday night. And so all around the space, we had these eclectic lamps and chandeliers hanging that gave it a real sense of difference. It really gave it a great look. And it also instantly gave it this sort of camaraderie. That story's not told in the movie, but that was my backstory to the actors.
Yeah.
And they loved it. And so when those actors, when all the women stepped on and the stunt performers as well, who are so important to this movie, when they all walked into that fight club, which was, boy, we had to clean the crap out of that thing because it was a, basically an abandoned thing that I had to fight tooth and nail to let my producers, especially my local Puerto Rican producer, she really didn't want me to shoot there. But I was like, this is it. I'm sorry, you have to. Like, I'm dreaming about this space. While I'm dreaming about how good it is, she's having nightmares about all the stuff that's, you know, not kosher about it. Anyway, so I keep getting distracted. When those women walked onto that set for the first time and they were like, oh, that's when you saw their shoulders start to roll. You know, they got to choose their own tape.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah, that's great.
If you see, not one fighter in the ring has the same colored tape. Everyone got to choose their tape. And, you know, that became that became sort of part of their character. And they hated being in this. We only shot there. We didn't shoot there as long as we needed. But by the end of it, everyone was like, peace out, Fight Club, because it became, you know, after a week in that place with the smoke that we had to keep billowing.
A little oppressive, maybe?
Yeah, everyone's like, I'm a bit over it.
Yeah.
But Paul, you know, the look on their faces when they first walked in was like, it was worth the price of admission.
Yeah, no, for sure. I could chat with you all day. Seriously, this is fantastic. I'm so glad we were able to connect. I want to respect your time and just wrap it up, but thanks again for joining us on Face to Face. And
my pleasure.
There's a line, midway through the film, I think it's an Alec Baldwin line, and he says something about, very sarcastically to Anna, to Malin's character, that, you know, something about the celebration of the human spirit, because, you know, it's almost like a toss away. But you know what? I mean, that's what this film was. This film is for, absolutely for women. Interesting that a man directing it, by the way, that I'd love to hear about that. But you know, it's for everybody. It really is. Well, and it really is a celebration. It's about fighting back. And then hopefully, you know, we can hug it out.
Yeah. And I think with this movie, what I wanted to do was imbue it with that. You know, look, I grew up doing martial arts, and I was always,
there you go.
You know, I love and respect fighters. And I've always, my dad was mad into the boxing game, or as he called it, the sweet science. and there's great. Something about that fighting spirit, you know, like, as I've said before, when someone gets in the ring, and this is what I've tried to get across, when Marlon meets Alec and she's trying to pitch him why she wants him as her coach, she says, I've heard that if you learn to get in the ring with someone who is trained to inflict pain on you, you're standing across from someone and they literally want to damage you. If you can learn to confront that, embrace it, then there's nothing in the real world that is going to bother you. When you come home and you're going to get evicted or you can't pay your rent, there's nothing painful about that compared to standing across from someone. So that's the kind of the message in this. And in the movie, the Fight Club is started by a woman who is a therapist. And this, she started it with her patients to give them an outlet, to give them a place to really face something really challenging, so that life issues seemed less important in comparison. And that's what Alec is saying in that little bit too, going, isn't it you that wanted to embrace this celebration of the human spirit? You know, that's what you're saying by wanting to get in the ring. It's like, okay, you want to feel this? You want to have this emotion, this feeling, then you're going to have to put in the work. I'm glad that came across.
I really hope
people do embrace it as much as you, and just sit back, have a cocktail, have some popcorn, forget about COVID, forget about the American election. Thank God you're in Canada.
It helps.
And just, you know, put your feet up and have a good time.
I'd say that's great advice, Paul. Hey man,
And then get up the next day and beat the hell out of someone.
That's right. Right. Yeah. And don't forget to hug though, right? Community hug. Yeah, exactly. That really important.
Punch it out and hug it out.
Yeah. Paul, what a pleasure, man. Holy cow. Just so love chatting with you today. What a pleasure meeting you. And thanks for the film. And I so love that there is this, you know, deeper, more important message there in a film that's just so much fun. So really appreciate it.
Thanks for seeing it.
We've been chatting with Paul Layden here today on Face to Face about his new film, Chick Fight. Thanks again, Paul.
Pleasure. Thank you, David. Take care.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.